this last session until about a couple days ago. And in a meeting, he actually looked at Brad and he's like, "Brad, you're the guy. You need to close it out. You need to be the one." And so, yeah, that's pretty cool for Pastor Rick to do that. And so don't blow it for us.
No pressure, right? No. How are you guys doing this morning? The title of my message is The Glory of Mud, and I can't wait to get to it. But before I do, I just want to say how grateful I am to have experienced the last 3 days with you guys. I mean, at times I've been a little bit busy, trying to, navigate little details, like, when rattlesnakes come around or people are stealing snacks from the snack bar and just random things that happen at a gathering like this. But for the most part, I've really been able to just experience this alongside of you. And I don't know about you, but I've been blown away by what God has poured out on us via the music, via the message, via the arts, via the workshops and breakout sessions. It's been incredible. And my heart is more full than it's ever been for vision for this generation. And I want you to know that as just one of the leaders of young adult ministry in Orange County, I'm so full of hope. I'm so full of hope that this generation is going to rise out of the status quo of what's expected of you as young adults. And you're going to grab a hold of something bigger, something greater, something God-sized for your life. Also, there's another thing I have to do before we move into the message. I just have to thank all of you who've volunteered over the course of really the last 4 months to make this possible. Yeah, amazing. Incredible. You guys have really, those of you who've served, you've really set the stage. You've set the context, the environment for us to engage and experience God in a new way. And so we're grateful for that. And I wish we had time. I would love to have time to parade each of you on stage and give you a huge gold medallion to say thank you. Instead, we've decided to give each of you a tent. There's a whole field out there full of them. Just go pick one. And that's your gift from us for volunteering. But really, you've showed a selfless heart. And you've put love into action, and we're grateful. This year couldn't have happened without you. In the coming years, when this thing doubles, triples, quadruples in size, who knows, it definitely won't be possible without you. You know, one of the cool things that happens being a college pastor is that you get to raise your kids around young adults. And that's one of the coolest things. My daughter Olivia just caught my eye. I didn't even see you there. Hi, sweetie. It's to have my wife, Carrie, and our four kids roll up at different times when they're available. And it's so cool because all the things that we're trying to model and teach them as parents, they see living, breathing examples of those things in you. And so my job as a parent is still going to be tough. But I think I have an advantage because they see passionate Christ followers that they want to be like in each of you. And where they can't connect with Carrie and I, they connect with you. And they love you and they long to be around you. And so I love the influence that you guys have had. However, late last night, I got a text from my wife. And I'm a little concerned about how you're influencing my youngest Eli, who's 2 months sitting over there in this. I call it the anaconda. What's the carrier called that he's in? Moby, the Moby, he's still in the Moby. I was concerned. She sent me, here's the first pic that she sent me. This is his 2 month pic, and he's just kind of hanging on the couch. We take a picture every month, and he's just like, "What's up?" But this second pic is what really concerned me. Now, I don't know if you can see this, but the kid is flashing a full-on gang sign down on his Huggies. He's like, "Yeah." So I don't know which one of you has spent time with him, that he's learning gang signs, but I'm concerned. Consider this your warning, okay? Don't mess with Eli. He's flashing gang signs on his Huggies, so be careful. As a parent, there's never a dull moment. I mean, you get to experience so much with your kids, and it's joyful. And One particular moment 2 years ago, I found Olivia, or Lucy rather, in our backyard like this. Just bam. She had found a mud puddle, and there she was. And it just, I don't know what it is about kids and mud, but they seem to be magnetically attracted. As it turns out, though, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Check this out. This is insightful. On the far left in the bikini is my wife. So that's where Lucy gets her love of the mud. I think I just may have jeopardized my marriage. So pray for me. You look hot in that picture, but that's weird. No, that's weird. That's when you're a girl. I better move on. Oh, gosh. You know, actually, much doesn't change as we get older. We still find a way to get in the mud, don't we? We trade physical, wet, juicy dirt that we play with and get nasty for the various messes of life that we create by our decisions, or the messes that are created because we just live in a broken, fallen world that sin has invaded and has corrupted. And as a result, every single one of us came to Radicalis with mud on our faces, mud on our hands, marred by this imperfect world that we live in, marred by our own foolish choices that we can't seem to break away from, at times even for a day or even for half a day or an hour, that we are drawn to the mud. The mud of life. I mean, and sometimes it feels like this endless cycle, even as a Christ follower, you know, like you experience hurt, which creates this deep need for comfort. And that deep need for comfort causes you and I at times to take shelter in things that actually make us feel worse and hurt us more. And it's not only that we have mud on our hands and our face, sometimes mud is all around us. And we feel as though we are trapped in a quite literal pit of mud, wondering, how can I escape from this? You know, knowing this about me, about you, about humanity, makes me so glad that God is a God of rescue. It's who He is. It's in His DNA. He delights in this idea of invading our world, invading our space, when we are the weakest, when we are the most vulnerable, when we are the most trapped. He delights in coming to us in one way or the other and extending His hand and saying, I see you in that pit and I want to pull you out. I want to rescue you. I mean, where would any of us be if that wasn't true of God's heart for us? You know where we'd be? The mud would be over our heads. We would have already drowned in our own cesspool of mistakes, of sin. It would be over for us if it weren't for God, if it weren't for His heart of rescue. Actually, when you read the Old Testament, this is one of the great themes of the Bible. I mean, you see it everywhere. I mean, if you start tying a couple things together that you read in the Bible, you go, God loves to rescue. I mean, this is what the flood was about. I mean, humans had made a mess of things. And God says, this flood looks like destruction, but it's actually rescuing humanity from itself. In the Tower of Babel thing, you know, people were like, we are mighty, we are strong, we will build a tower. And God says, you're getting off track. And He invades in what looks kind of like cruel, like the languages thing, you know, which if you've ever traveled, frustrates you to death. It's like, I just wish I would know this language, you know, it just drives you crazy. You can't even say like, I really got to pee. Like you forgot how to say that. And so you just pee your pants. And it's not a good thing to do in a foreign culture, or well, any culture for that matter. But God over and over asserting Himself. I mean, this is what the wandering in the desert was about. His people, their hearts were off track. They were full of complaining and bitterness. And it wasn't good. They weren't responding to God's leadership. And he makes them wander in attempts to rescue just a few hearts that would respond to what He was doing. respond to the extending of his hand. And I love that God is not some timid, removed being somewhere off in the clouds. And he loves to boldly assert himself in the story of our world to get our attention and say, there's something better for you. There's something greater for you. You know, I love the book of Psalm because it's, I don't know if you've experienced this, but it's just so raw, you know? It's like when you open the book of Psalms, you feel like you're reading something that maybe you shouldn't. Like you stole someone's journal and like they're just like, I mean, sometimes David just full on, he's like, wow, with God. Like he goes to battle, right? He's wrestling with God. He's saying, this isn't fair. I'm this, you know, he just goes off. And one of his gut level prayers that I can't seem to get away from, you know, here all these years later of, you know, I've been, had a relationship with God for 27 years. And I just keep coming back to this one prayer of David's because it just speaks so much of who God is. This is Psalm 40. Starting in verse 1, this is David's own story of rescue. He says, I waited patiently for the Lord to help me. And he turned to me and he heard my cry. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. And when I read that section of scripture, I can't help but think of me. I can't help but think of those times in my life in the not so distant past when I've been in that pit for one reason or another. And I've said, God, I don't know how I got here. I don't understand why my heart is in this place or why this relationship is what it is. And you just feel like all you can do is say, help. And somehow, some way, it's not that God changes the circumstances always around you, but something happens inside of your heart. He pulls you out of that place. And he puts a song in your heart, a new song that just says, I was here and I don't pretend to understand it all, but somehow God rescued me from where I could have gone or where, you know, the hole could have gone a lot deeper. I could have gotten a lot more stuck, but God in his mercy, when I didn't even have the word help quite fully out of my mouth when he turned and he said, bam, I'm on the move. Rescue mission. One of my sons, one of my daughters is in a pit and I am moving in to show myself strong. So we read about David. We reflect on it in our own life. And this just proves that nothing has changed about God. The same God that transcends all of time and space, who rescued over and over and over and over again the children of Israel, is still rescuing you and I. That's what the cross was about. It was a rescue mission. And it's not like it just happens once, you know, and when we say, God, hey, God, for the very first time I'm saying yes to you. I give my life to you. I surrender as best know how. Will you wash me and make me clean? That's the rescue, capital R. But wouldn't you agree that all through your walk, when you look back, when you reflect, you go, there it is again. There it is again. He rescued, he heard, he saw, he spoke. He pulled me out of where I was. See, for me, at the core, the Christian faith is a heart that responds to the rescuing God. That just says, God, in my weakest most vulnerable moment, you were there. See, the rescue is for us, but the rescue is not about us. Did you catch that? The rescue is for us, but it is not about us, because ultimately the rescue does one thing in the end. It reveals how glorious God is. This, my friends, is the glory of the mud. Because it is in the mud that we see the hand of God. It is in the mud that we see God responding to human brokenness and weakness with hope, with healing, with his strength, with his power. Now that is something to be incredibly excited about. That God has always and will always be in the business of seeing us and reaching out. That's his response to our mess. We offer him mud, and he offers us healing. We offer him mud, and he offers us hope. We offer him mud, and he offers us healing. We offer him mud, and he offers us redemption. Late last night, as I was just reflecting and thinking about you guys and what God's been doing, I kept coming back to this idea of redemption. That God is redeeming. And I looked up the definition, because it's one of those words that I think more than maybe any, you know, group of people, believers in Jesus, Christians, we throw around that word redemption. You've been redeemed. You know, and like, but sometimes we're guilty of saying words and we're like, well, what does that, what does redeemed mean? Like, you know, like you redeem a coupon. I think that like we, you know, like give God our lives and he gives us like something cheaper at the dollar store. No, I don't know what it means. I'm sorry. The third definition down on whatever site I was on at 2 a.m. said this about redemption. Redemption is the improved state of somebody or something saved from an apparently irreversible decline. Redemption is the improved state of somebody or something saved from apparently irreversible decline. Is that not us in two words as people? Irreversible decline. That is me. Left to my own devices, left to my own tendencies, I am irreversibly declining. God's a rescuer. God takes something hopeless and he breathes hope into it, and thus showing just how great he is. It's the glory of the mud. You know, maybe for some of you, this is what Radicalis 2011 is all about. You're realizing for the first time, or maybe all over again for the first time, that God has and is rescuing you. That there isn't anything that you could get entrapped in, entangled in, be burdened by, be tormented by, that his presence couldn't make okay. Did you know that there is nothing that the nearness of God cannot make right inside of us? That his presence, when we live, this is why the Bible, this is why Jesus himself says, commune, abide, stay rooted and connected in me. Because when we do, we receive on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, the flow of God's heart for us. So maybe that's it. Radicalis 2011 for you is the first two verses of Psalm 40. You've realized all over again, man, I was in a pit, or I am in a pit, and God sees me, right? The look of Jesus. And then he heard my cry. I waited and I cried and he heard it. And then he pulled me out of that place and he spoke. And he spoke into existence. He breathed into existence something new on the inside of me that was like a greater capacity to praise him, because I am a living, breathing example of the rescuing power of God. Maybe that's it for you, 2011. And if that's your takeaway, man, you got a lot. Good for you, because that is the core. That's the crux. You connecting to that part of God's heart. For others of you, Radicalis 2011 has been about you realizing for the first time, or maybe all over again for the first time, that God has called you to join him in his rescuing missions. That now that you've been, this is kind of ironic, follow me here, that now that God's heard you and pulled you out of whatever mess that you've been and continues to do so, and he washes you clean, he puts a new song in your heart, that he's now calling you to get back into the mud. And it's very counterintuitive, and it's why sometimes we as believers, we form these little holy huddles, these little Christian ghettos, these little walled in places that sometimes are called churches. But a church that doesn't respond to what Jesus has done by going out into the dark places, the muddy places, the gutters in our neighborhood, in our county, in our cities, in our states, in our world, it's really no Christian community at all. Just people that really enjoy soaking in what God has done for them and them alone. But that betrays the very essence of who God has created us to be. We are made in his image. And if God is a rescuer, guess what we are too? Maybe, just maybe, could there be more to this story than us being made right with God? Could it be that God then invites us to be a part of what he's doing? Sharing Jesus, caring for orphans, loving on the outcast, the broken, the forgotten, the neglected, is not some heavy Christian responsibility that we should walk around, you know, and stuff it in our backpack and sort of trudge through life and say, God, I want to be a part of what you're doing, and this is hard, and oh, but I'm serving you, and my calves and quads are burning, and I just want to rest. No. Caring for orphans and widows and rescuing people and trying to be Jesus with skin on to them is the greatest privilege that we could ever have, aside from the saving work of Jesus on the cross for us personally. That God would say, I see you, I've rescued you, but now. What did he say in Matthew, Sermon on the Mount? He said, you are the light of the world. Now wait a second. Isn't God the light? I mean, isn't he? Do you see it? He wants us to share in the glory of the rescue. Every movie that we sort of are enamored with, every story that grips us, has some form of rescue in it. Why? It's because it's one of the meta themes that's woven into our DNA. We are rescued. We are then called to be rescued. So maybe for you, Radicalis 2011 isn't so much about verse 1 and 2, although that's your foundation. Maybe you say, wait a second. He set me up on this solid ground and steadied me. But now he's given me that new song, and I'm singing it. I'm going back into the mud, and I'm singing this song. And when people hear, when people see who I am in God, they're going to say, whoa, who are you? You freak me out, dude. What is up with you? The rescue of God is meant to be initiated through you and me. I said the rescue of God is meant to be initiated by you and by me. 2 Corinthians 5:18 through 20 puts it like this. God put the world square with himself through the Messiah, giving the world a fresh start by offering forgiveness of sins. God has given us the task of telling everyone what he is doing. We're Christ's representatives. God uses us to persuade men and women to drop their differences and enter into God's work of making things right between them. We're speaking for Christ himself. Now, be friends with God. He's already a friend with you. We're speaking for Christ himself. Can you imagine if you and I grabbed a hold of that and said, wherever I go in the seemingly ordinary moments of my day, when I clock in at Starbucks, when I roll up to Saddleback Community College and I look at those portables and I say, oh God, I don't want to go in there again. I don't want to be at this school. What if we changed our mentality and said, wait a second, God has me where I am for a reason, and I speak on his behalf. I represent him. This isn't about me, ultimately my degree and how I feel about where I am and how I'm doing in life. That's not my core identity. My core identity is in Jesus, and he says, you are my representative. You have been given authority to speak on behalf of Jesus Christ himself. Can you imagine if you started to embody what we've talked about this weekend around your friends? And it just starts with something simple. You noticing somebody and walking over to them and saying, hi, I'm a person. So are you. I see you. Okay, maybe you shouldn't do that, but you seeing them and you engaging them. I bet if you started noticing people, especially people that everybody else marginalized, that everybody looked down on for one reason or another, that everybody doesn't want to quite be too close to because they're afraid other people will associate, you know, them and their coolness value will go down. You know what I'm talking about? And you said, forget all that. Jesus loves that person. And I don't give a beep what anybody else thinks. Thank you for beeping that out, by the way. That was a good catch. Could it be that God could use you covered in mud? What if we leaned into the things that overwhelm us, that frighten us? When we hear statistics about orphans or AIDS or human trafficking or child abuse or rape, man, I don't know about you, but something wants to back away from that and go, where's the nearest nice group of Christians that I can sing 1,000 praise and worship songs with till 6 in the morning every single weekend? Like, that's what I love. That's who I am. I mean, that's what it makes me want to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. We should be a community full of prayer and worship. But when it's not balanced with this urgency, this sense of saying, wait a second. Part of the reason God is pouring out on us and we're experiencing such joy and freedom is so that we could give it away. So we need to learn to lean into the mud, to lean into the drama, to lean into the things that scare us and frighten us. It's incredibly counterintuitive. And Jesus is going, come on. When you do this, you will experience the life that I've intended you to live. This is part of the abundant life that Jesus invites us to live. We're so bored with our faith because we're not in the pit of mud, wrestling with somebody, talking to them, trying to get them to look up and cry out to God. I mean, that's the greatest adventure that you could ever embark on, is to rescue another suffering, lost, broken, confused human being. There is nothing more exhilarating than seeing someone respond to God for the first time. Nothing. There's nothing more satisfying There will be nothing more satisfying than when you and I stand before God and we look to our left and we look to our right and we see people that we had a hand somehow by the grace and the power of God. We had a hand in them being there with us in eternity. There's no greater joy. There's no greater thing that we could give our life to out of response. What if we became people who weren't afraid of the mud? If we became people who said, God, I don't care anymore about my cleanliness. This is disgusting. We said, God, this mud, it reminds me of the pits that I keep falling into, but you keep rescuing me. And I'm getting stronger in you. And now I'm hearing this call. And it scares me, but you're calling me. You're inviting me into the gutters around me. You're saying, God's saying, help me rescue that person. I long for that person. And as you get in, there's just an acceptance of saying following Jesus is muddy. It's not comfortable, especially if you have OCD. But there's an acceptance that you feel that you didn't play it safe. That you didn't sit in the four walls of your church in your little huddles. But you risked it. That you full on live out Romans 12 and you said, God, in view of your mercy, I offer my body as a living sacrifice to you. Jesus, thank you for the privilege of being called to join you in the rescue of this world. Thank you for rescuing us. God, we were in hopeless decline. And all we did was look up and raise our hand and we said, God, help. As we close Radic House 2011, I want to invite you to be a person of the mud. I want to invite you to be very comfortable around the mess. People that are hurting because they've lost someone they loved and it scares you to go near to them because you don't know what to say. But you push past that fear and you go stand in that place of suffering. I invite you to be a person of the mud that says, God, if you want me to go to some far off land, to some people group that's never heard your name, and eat rice for 3 meals a day for 3 months so that they can know Jesus, here I am. Cover me in mud, God. The rescued become the rescuers. Only a glorious God could do that. So as the band comes up, we got orange buckets down there. And I don't want to be the only one that looks like this because I feel really goofy right now. This is like mud imported from Finland or something. It's very good on the pores. But I want to invite you to interact with the mud however you want. You don't have to. But I don't know about you, when God is speaking to me and something is burning on the inside of me, I want to do something physical, tangible, to express what's happening on the inside of me. And that's all this mud is. Maybe you just want to dip your little pinky into it because that's all you feel like you can do. That's honest. Maybe some of you want to take a bath in it. That could be fun to watch. I love you guys. Jesus, as we sing to you, have your way. Burn into our hearts the things that you've done. Mold us and shape us so that we look like you and smell like you to a broken world. Let's stand and sing to him together.
Calls me to grace.